This is The Current, and I'm your guide, Nadia Last. Today, I want to share some lessons that I've been moving through in my life. I started my business, my podcast, my one-on-one work, my therapy and coaching, human design, community gatherings, etc., because I believe in a few things. The first is that we're all divine souls having a human experience. This human experience is designed to stretch us spiritually. We are in an earth school with a unique curriculum of relationships and experiences that are designed to help us grow and evolve. Growth happens through challenge, through difficulty, sometimes through struggle, through sticky points, through things that don't always feel the best because they're designed to activate us in some way. The goal? To ensure that we're all interconnected, to help us remember that we're all interconnected, and that we come from the same loving life force source energy, the love that's flying around our universe. The goal is also in these sticky points for us to choose love in every interaction that we have, even when we choose something else first, because that's our well-worn coping mechanism that we've used in the past. We're here to turn up the brightness of the love that's always in our hearts. We're here to raise the vibration of our planet through consistent inner inquiry and presence with ourselves. And despite having these momentary glimpses of this truth and surrounding myself, I'm looking at them right now with these beautiful plants and crystals, and I have my two dogs next to me and books and yada yada tarot cards, I forget it. I forget this truth that we are divine beings and that we're here to choose love. I still have to go through my own human experiences to gain experiential wisdom. My journey is really clunky. It's full of fumbles and these almost laughable moments of ignorance where I envision myself on a slack line, and that's my spiritual practice. So when I'm on the slack line, I'm like, yes, I'm here, I've arrived, and then I fall off, and then I fall off, and then I fall off. It's actually not about falling off, even though I get so frustrated with myself when I do. It's about having the tools and the skills to bring myself gracefully, sometimes not so gracefully, back onto the slack line. So in this fast-paced world of endless media scrolling, this is why I love podcasting. I really crave real life, honest examples of humans on their individual spiritual quests to stimulate my own self-reflection, my own self-observation, and my own growth. I want to hear the real. I want to ask everyone I meet, what lesson are you currently learning in life? A very fun party question. And the irony is not lost on me that I'm getting married to my partner in October, October 14th. Which also happens to be the new moon and a solar eclipse in mystical Sedona. And I will be taking my partner Scott's last name, and his last name is Lessons, L-E-S-S-A-N-S, but it's pronounced like the word lessons, like L-E-S-S-O-N-S. So it really feels so interesting that I'm here to really continue to meditate on lessons, growth, transformation. What are you learning? What is hard? What is difficult? What is the universe revealing to you again and again and again and again, sometimes through really painful reminders? And I was watching a video the other day about somebody describing, you feel like you've learned a lesson, and then the universe brings what this person called a dangle into your vision, your field of vision. That's like, let me just dangle this thing to see if they would take the bait the way that younger versions of themselves have. So I know this, it's kind of like a game, and I know that the universe is going to continue to dangle things in front of me, and sometimes, because it's such a well-worn groove of behavior, I take the dangle, I take the bait, I slide back into a lesser version of myself, a smaller version of myself, a younger version of myself, and I don't choose the higher path. And I just want to share the real about that so that we can feel less alone. One of my favorite mantras is create what you want to see in the world. And as such, I'm humbly offering my own life lessons and stories from my human fumbling here in an effort to reconnect you to your heart, to your spiritual journey, and hopefully make all of us feel less alone in the shared humanity of it all. Last month, Scott's family friends threw us an engagement party, and the person throwing the party called it Lessons in Love, a play on his last name. And I really like it. I think it really sticks. If we are all here to learn lessons to bring us back into love, that's what I want to call this meandering, these questions, these experiences, a series that I will call Lessons in Love. So here we go. Lessons in Love, July 2023. There are three big lessons. The first is Legacies of Family Secrets. The second is Shame as a Teacher. And the third is Unapologetic Emotional Release in the Middle of a Crowded Airport. Lesson number one, Legacies of Family Secrets. I was in Michigan this past week, and I have three remaining grandparents of my four. My grandfather's since passed, but three of my grandparents still remain. They're alive. And I feel pretty lucky at 31 years of age that I still have three remaining grandparents. Two of my grandparents live overseas in the Middle East, and they were visiting Michigan over the past month. And so I went to go see them because they proclaimed that this would likely be their last trip to the United States. And there is a chance that this might be the last time that I ever see them. The bittersweet finality of our goodbyes hit me like a ton of bricks as I was walking through the airport to catch my plane back to San Francisco this weekend. I really wanted to use my time with these grandparents wisely, and I asked them questions that felt like my own private podcast interview with them. What were your biggest regrets? What is your favorite quality about each other? What was my mom like as a baby? What advice do you have after nearly 60 years of marriage? There was another family member sitting close to us within earshot as I was asking these very deep and personal questions, who was clearly uncomfortable, rolled their eyes and stated sarcastically, like, Nadia, with all the questions. And a younger version of me might have shrunk back and become smaller at this accusation, but age and learning my human design and being in my power as a therapist has made me a lot bolder and sure of myself. So I continued asking, and my grandparents gratefully, generously, were sharing so much of themselves and their lives. I was reflecting on the discomfort that my family has, and I think a lot of families share, with diving into family history, though. And I think it's because there has always been a legacy of secrets on both sides. And this is how society taught us to be as humans for many, many years. Family histories of addiction or mental illness, miscarriages, arrests, affairs, financial difficulties, and all manner of taboo scandals are things that many of our families don't talk about. And the unspoken message that I heard loud and clear growing up was, there are some things simply too painful or too shameful to talk about. Over time, I feel like those secrets become the loudest unspoken voices in the room. And so we're attempting to get together as family members and enjoy time together. But there are these things right underneath the surface that people are really trying very, very hard to dodge and dive around. Frustrations, worries, resentments, fears, regrets. And often I feel like these things are, people feel like they need to drown it out with overindulging in food or beverages or surface level chatter that never penetrates too deeply just beneath the surface. By contrast, I am and always have been such a curious person. I felt like an emotional bull in a china shop, unafraid to ask, why are things the way that they are? And I even had this memory as I was going home this past week of sitting my mom down when I was in third grade. She was folding laundry and I sat her down. She was so horrified. And I was like, Mom, we are having the sex talk. You are going to tell me exactly what sex is, how it works, how you make a baby. And my mom was so uncomfortable to talk about this. And I still remember it. I forced her to talk about it. And that's a funny example, but it illustrates how we're taught not to talk about some things. And what does that do? What dysfunction does that breed in family systems? In many ways, these legacies of secrecy are what drove me to create a home away from home on the West Coast. I moved to California right after college and have been living here for almost a decade. I feel like as an emotionally sensitive being back home, I can feel the things that are just underneath the surface. It's almost like I have this X-ray vision. And I think a lot of sensitive people listening to this podcast will relate to this feeling of just because we don't talk about it doesn't mean that I can't feel their presence. Doesn't mean that I can't feel that it's there. That's in many ways why I chose the profession that I'm in. I feel like every human being that I talk to is this iceberg where it's like, yeah, we're talking up here and I can see what's above the surface of the water. But beneath the water, I know all of us have such huge histories of multidimensionality and worries and regrets and fears. And as I continue to build my therapy practice, every person that I meet, I'm like, wow, there is so much underneath the surface for you. As I was walking through the airport, I was just reflecting as I walked by every single person. Wow, the complexity and the nuance and the depth of what every single person around me, this anonymous stranger, is experiencing is so vast. It's actually pretty mind-blowing. I think for many years, I avoided my family of origin. At least a handful of years while I was living on the West Coast, I would pick up calls from them less. I would call them proactively less. I would visit less. I missed a lot of family functions. And what I'm working on within myself is my ability to be with these people and yet not force things out of jars that people aren't ready to open. And that's hard. It's hard for me. And also not to judge different ways of being and to really know how to focus on the real love and connection that's available in my family system. My family is full of really wonderful, heart-open people. What I recognize now is that my soul chose this specific family. It's very, very divinely ordained that way. And I feel really grateful that the level of functioning in my family emotionally is such that there is no need to sever ties. There is no need to set a ton of boundaries. I know that that's different for many people, including a lot of my clients, where their soul chose their family and also a big part of their growth is figuring out what to allow and what not to allow. So it's a very nuanced conversation. And yet not looking at family stuff, not being open to what it is that is here to activate within us, I found is not the answer for me. It's actually one of my greatest teachers and lessons, the family system that I'm born into. How can I contribute in positive ways? How can I continue to choose love in its simplicity despite the complexities? And that is not a quest that I'm always successful at. I feel myself oscillating between a higher version of myself and a lower version of myself all the time. It is really, really hard to stay awakened and enlightened and heart open around people that we have been around for our younger versions of ourselves, when our body still remembers, when there's still pockets of experience and emotion that haven't found their way to the surface when we were younger. A big piece of my soul's mission is interrupting and shifting generational patterns of behavior. Specifically for me, meaning I love you, I accept you, I see you, I am there for you, and also what am I choosing to do? I believe we all carry a similar soul mission in our family systems, should we choose to answer the call. My coping mechanism before finding spirituality was to be this really bossy older sister, sharing my perspective about how people should live, and it was often from a place of disdain, or even in times that I'm really not proud of, maybe scorn. And these old habits die hard for me. I still feel my heart hardening in this familiar way when I'm with my family. And I observe myself overeating foods that don't make me feel good as a way to kind of distract myself away from what's happening, or overindulging in alcohol in an attempt to distract myself. Or I'll feel myself dissociating from an experience completely. I actually missed my flight home last week when I was heading to Michigan. And there was this moment where I realized, and I connected it to so many experiences in my life leading up to that, of missing flights, leaving my belongings places, just not being fully present. And what I understand this to be and what I'm learning about myself is that this was a coping mechanism that I used in my younger years to escape. I would mentally escape when I didn't find my surroundings to be pleasing or healthy or whatever it was. And so when I missed my flight at, 31 years of age, and all of my family kind of rolled their eyes like, typical Nadia. And I was like, wow, I haven't felt myself do this in like over a decade. It's recognizing where these are old coping behaviors that I was heading home and I felt myself dissociating. And I found myself kind of like addressing this critical inner voice that was berating myself for not having a more enlightened way to manage this extended time with family. And what I told myself is, this is what your body knows and remembers. You are learning a new way of relating to yourself and to them. Be kind and patient with yourself. What I'm telling myself now is, of course, family stuff feels the stickiest. This is what I work on with most of my clients. This is the meat and potatoes of our spiritual curriculum. If you're activated in some way, you know you're exactly where you need to be. So lesson number two, the power of emotions, openly sobbing in the San Francisco airport. I missed my flight. And there was this moment where I was kind of like dissociating from my body and I didn't make it through security in time. And I got a call from the airline that was like, Ms. Last, are you coming to the plane? And I was like, I'm about to be through security, be there in a few minutes. And they were like, we're closing the doors right now. And I just started sobbing. Part of it is because it was on the heels of my bachelorette party, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. But I was just so, so, so exhausted and emotional. And I'm learning that enlightenment for me isn't about avoiding my emotional stressors. It's about growing my capacity to sit in them, creating space for emotional catharsis when it's time to release old stickiness from my body and then learn a new way of relating to them. So emotions come up in surprising circumstances, including in the middle of the security line at the SFO airport. And I am really working on not judging that. And so when I started sobbing, I actually just allowed myself to fully start crying. I was like, I got to practice what I preach here. I have to do this right now. Like, emotions are showing up for a reason. Can I just let them flow? And I cried in the middle of the airport like an overstimulated toddler. I made the person behind the ticket counter feel very uncomfortable as they rebooked me on the next available flight. Then there was this woman who came up to me and said, can I give you a hug? She gave me a hug and she's like, I just want you to know my mother died yesterday. And so I really understand how you feel. And there was this part of me that was like, oh my God, I cannot tell this woman that the only reason I'm crying right now is because I missed my flight. Like, it's so silly. And I was like, I challenged that voice in myself that said, what I told myself is, you don't need to quite understand all of the emotions moving through your system right now. Part of this is likely inner child stuff. Part of this is just feeling the fullness of the emotions of the past weekend. Part of this is likely grasping the fact that you are about to visit your grandparents for perhaps the last time, working through the finality of that goodbye and that chapter closing and that relationship, working through all the feelings of, you know, my upcoming wedding and the passage of time, life and death. The stimulus was just me missing my flight. And it would have been really easy to dismiss that and tell myself not to start crying. I just allowed myself to cry. And how beautiful that my uninhibited emotions actually opened up a complete stranger to share with me their emotions. And as I let the tears stream down my face, I had this moment of thinking, like, I hope I can do this for my own kids someday. I hope that when we're in public, I can allow them to fully emotionally express, even as I'm feeling the discomfort of the people around us. Because emotions make us feel uncomfortable. We don't talk about them. Lesson number three. Shame is a teacher, my bachelorette party reflections. So my airport exhaustion and emotionality came on the heels of this epic bachelorette party that I was thrown for me the weekend before. And I have to be honest, when Scott and I first got engaged, I said to myself and to him, I am not having a bachelorette party. I think it's stupid. I don't want penis straws. I don't want, you know, pictures of you printed out. I think it's silly to have a separate weekend beyond the wedding where people have to travel and make arrangements. But if I got brutally honest with myself, what I really felt is fear. I felt afraid to ask the people in my life to travel for an entire weekend simply to celebrate me. You might think that a wedding is that, but that's the couple. And so after some gentle and loving convincing by the two people who ended up planning the bachelorette weekend, I was on board. I wanted to find a way, actually, after talking with them for several weeks, several months, truly, about what this meant to me is like maybe the, even the word bachelorette didn't feel quite right. What I really wanted to do is to plan a retreat-esque weekend with the women in my life that I cherish, with my soul friends, and to hopefully pair this with an epic dance party. What I really came to recognize once we decided to have this weekend is that the tradition itself matters less than a group of humans coming together to share in a ceremony, to share in a ritual, to share in an experience where everybody understands its shared significance. And I think that the palpability of that event is only heightened by the fact that we're actually celebrating love. It's a gathering to celebrate love. So I'm an Aries sun. I notoriously love birthdays, my birthdays and everybody else's. I work with a system called Human Design that is all about basically the moment that you were born, birthdays, celebrating your uniqueness, your expansiveness, your gifts. I love celebrating myself. I don't have any problem with it. In fact, I have a podcast episode called Celebrate Your Own Damn Birthday, which I would encourage you to go listen to if you haven't before. It's all about basically like an ode to birthdays and how we're really being called into self-love through the celebration of our own birthdays. And that is why it really shocked me that in the months leading up to my bachelorette party, I felt these really unfamiliar and uncomfortable pangs of insecurity. I found myself asking myself, have I been a good enough friend? Have I been a good enough sister? Have I been a good enough cousin to deserve this celebration? And as the weekend drew nearer, I felt so much anxiety about the weather. Was it going to be too hot? It was going to be in the hundreds. It was in wine country. The food, was the food good enough? Were the accommodations going to be comfortable for people? This anxiety was not about any of the logistics. It was actually masking a deeper fear that people might feel frustration, resentment, and obligation at being yanked from their lives to celebrate me. In reality, taking up this amount of other people's space, time, and resources was a level of vulnerability that I had never felt before. Additionally, each of these women from these different chapters of my life were actually these unexpected mirrors for me of how I showed up or didn't show up in each of those periods of my life. So I found myself getting very emotional. This is also in the height of watery emotional cancer season. And what I really was feeling is shame. Shame when I wasn't the best friend or the best sister or the best cousin. So I asked myself, how can I allow shame to teach me right now? How can I allow shame to be my teacher? Because shame is such an insidious emotion when we keep it to ourselves. You know, I can't believe I acted in that way. I can't believe I was that way. But shame, when we keep it inside, it's such a low vibration emotion. So I wanted to move with it. I wanted to acknowledge it, to talk about it. The whole theme of this episode today is talking about the things that we don't talk about. So I was like, okay, how can I do this? And I decided to write a long letter to all of the women attending my bachelorette party. And in those letters, some of them, I started writing amends. I'm sorry for the times in which I didn't show up. I acknowledge that I haven't been the best in XYZ way. I love you for sticking through me during times where I may have acted more selfishly or more judgmentally. And as I wrote these things where they needed to be written, I felt this lightness in my chest. And that's how you can know that you're working through the stickiness and the stuckness of those emotions. I felt this levity. And then I felt this outpouring of love flow through me. I love you for XYZ. I'm so grateful for these qualities about you. And it was so easy to feel into the love once I had acknowledged the shame. It was a really, really, really powerful exercise for me. And I felt like it was this energetic clearing and cleaning of the house, so to speak, in each of these relationships that are so meaningful for me. As I wrote these letters, I started to feel genuinely excited for this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to bring all of these pockets of humans from different parts of my life under the same roof. Many of them had never met before. And I started to look at the weekend as one of opportunity, not burden. And as soon as we sat down for our opening share circle the first night, I shared really openly about how it was the most vulnerable thing I'd ever done. And it gave way, I think, what I want to say here is that often in these celebrations, these milestones, we're told to only be in the quote unquote happy or good emotions, the celebration, the euphoria, the joy. But often these celebrations can feel hollow because we're not acknowledging the challenging emotions that are just underneath the surface, the darkness and the light. And so what I'm really proud of for this weekend is that we shared very, very openly and vulnerably about what each of us were going through. Some of us were going through really amazing seasons of life. Others were going through challenging seasons. And it was through actually bringing all of these emotions in the same space, talking about what people don't talk about. It allowed us by Saturday night to have these really spontaneous and joyful dance parties that didn't feel forced, and it didn't feel like we needed, you know, substances in order to bring it about. Like, it felt like a very natural celebration and euphoria of like whooping and hollering and dancing and singing because we had moved through the stuckness. So it was amazing. From a logistical perspective, we did a psychedelic sound healing with a really fantastic sound healer named Cypress Dubin. I'll link her in the show notes. It's somebody that I've been studying under for sound healings. My mentor and co-therapist, Claire, showed up to lead the circle. My business collaborator, Sam, who I do a lot of these human design episodes with here, she led the opening circles and did a tea ceremony, and there were meditations and journaling. And we also had an epic yoga class led by another friend and some Shavasana adjustments and a grounding meditation led by my sister-in-law, who is just amazing. I actually brought my harmonium on Saturday morning and played it for the first time in front of everyone and sang. And we went to a beautiful lunch and we had a paella party in the backyard, and we did a costume dance party with a silent disco on Saturday night. And it just was all of my favorite things in a single weekend. And it allowed me, it gave me permission. And I actually want to give you permission to whatever it is that you're celebrating, bring your whole self into it. Don't leave any parts out. There are no bad emotions. There are no bad parts. There are no pieces of your history that are perhaps too painful to look at, though perhaps you might need professional support in opening up some of those tightly sealed jars. But really what I want to share today is that the possibility for us as we move through stuckness, as we move through shame or spirals and cycles of challenge, is to move in and through them so that we feel lighter, more loving, more joyful, and more dancey on the other side. So I'm holding all of it right now, the life, the death, the renewal, and the endings, the closures, the finality, the expansiveness, the potentiality, and the multidimensionality of our existence. And that concludes my first installment in Lessons in Love. Thank you so much for joining. Thank you for being here. I love you. Until next time.